music, news, podcasts, whenever you want. The WSHU app puts it all in one place, plus playlists to keep track of what you hear. And now it's even easier to connect with us by sending feedback through the app. Download the WSHU app today, free on the App Store or Google Play.
You're listening to WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Governor Lamont gives an update on I-91 construction near Meriden, a look at Ed Romaine's proposed capital project budget for Suffolk County for 2027. Firefighters battle a major blaze on Fire Island, plus the latest from WSHU's Digital Citizen. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut officials say progress has been made on the Interstate 91 project near Meriden, but construction is far from complete. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
The Connecticut Department of Transportation says the project started 2 years ago in an attempt to address one of the most congested areas in the state. The reconfiguration project includes construction on Interstate 91, Interstate 691, and the Route 15 interchange. CTDOT Commissioner Garrett Ucolito says the area was not built to withstand the amount of traffic it sees currently.
We're reconfiguring the interchange with upgraded ramps, longer merge distances, improved sight lines, and modern bridges and roadways.
Ucolito says the newly constructed ramp to East Main Street from the Route 15 northbound bridge is expected to open to traffic this week. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
Suffolk County Executive Ed Romaine has proposed a capital project budget of almost $900 million for 2027. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio explains.
The capital budget is for big infrastructure projects. It's separate from the annual operating budget. Romaine's spending plan focuses on sewer and other water quality projects, road repairs, and $200 million for upgrades to the Long Island Railroad Hub in Ronkonkoma. Another big-ticket item is the new medical examiner building in Hauppauge. Officials say the existing building dates back to the 1980s, with such outdated infrastructure that it can no longer be repaired. Romaine's plan calls for $185 million in spending on the new facility. Work is already underway there, with a completion goal set for 2029. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Connecticut's State Senate unanimously passed a bill last week to create a bridge program to help people at risk of losing Medicaid or SNAP benefits. As the New England News Collaborative's Michaela Savitt explains, the bill is in response to federal changes to work requirements that have left some populations vulnerable.
That includes people ages 55 to 64, people at risk of homelessness or already unhoused, and veterans. Democratic State Senator Kathy Austin says the goal is to see if individuals identified as able-bodied by the new federal requirements are work-ready.
If they are not, can we provide job training or job coaching to make them available for work? And if they cannot, can we provide data to show why or why not they cannot complete these work requirements?
If the measure gets House approval, the state agency's plan would be due back to the legislature in January. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Michaela Savitt.
Sometimes it's the simplest mistake that can leave you at risk of a cyber attack. A conversation on how to avoid that is coming up.
On Good at Heart, you'll hear conversations with people who quietly make the world better. Like Zelda Rowland of the Yale Prison Education Initiative.
Just the fire lit under me and thinking about how important it was to extend access to this wealth of intellectual resources.
Check out Good at Heart at WSHU.org.
The town of Riverhead is weighing the future of its anti-bias task force after the resignation of its chairman earlier this year. Mark McLaughlin quit in February after he said the task force was discouraged from discussing ICE and deportation. He accused the town's representative on the task force, Republican Denise Merrifield, from preventing those kinds of discussions. Merrifield denies the accusation. The McKinley Elementary School Carnival in Fairfield was canceled following a panic after reports of gunfire on Friday night. Police say there is no evidence that shots were actually fired. Police also responded to reports of multiple fights. The panic led to a crowd surge near the gates of the carnival. The interim chancellor of Connecticut State Colleges and Universities has resigned following a complaint that he violated policy. John Maduka was placed on administrative leave on Thursday and then resigned Friday. There is no information on the notion of the complaint. At least six fire departments responded to a blaze on Fire Island Friday afternoon. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio has more.
Two fire departments took boats across the Great South Bay to help put out the fire at Ocean Beach. One multi-million dollar home was completely destroyed, and two other buildings were damaged, according to officials. The Suffolk County Police Department's arson squad is investigating, but officials say they do not suspect a criminal cause. No civilians got hurt, according to police. Several first responders were treated for smoke inhalation. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
I'm Janice Roman. Welcome to Digital Citizen, a place where we discuss the pillars of digital citizenship and help you feel empowered to engage with the online world. Today we'll hear from Jason Pufall. He's a cybersecurity expert with 20 years of infrastructure and information security experience. We'll talk about data privacy, our digital footprint, and best practices to stay safe online.
What are some fundamentals to secure our digital information, good habits that we need to have as a standard?
So the first thing that I would tell anybody is ensure that you have unique passwords for really for any site or login that you have. One of the biggest mistakes that I see routinely is somebody using, you know, a single password for everything, or maybe just a derivation of that same password. You really want to think about being unique anytime that there's a compromise. And we see large scale compromises all the time. You know, a few years ago, LinkedIn had a, you know, multiple million username and password database compromise. And the intent isn't necessarily to be able to capture those and log into LinkedIn. It's that they understand that everybody uses the same password for everything. So if they can get them, they can try them at your bank, they can try them at your healthcare provider, you know, different places. Make sure you have a unique password. And the second thing that I would say is anywhere that you have data that's sensitive. So again, you know, bank, life insurance, doctors, you know, things like that in particular, make sure you're using multi-factor or second factor so that you have a secondary way to validate who you are. Those are both really critical.
Now, can we talk a little bit about other areas where data may be collected, things such as apps, wearables, home security systems? What are ways that we are unknowingly sharing personal data?
Oof, everywhere. You know, the first thing everybody, and I do it, everybody does it, right? You log into a new app and you simply hit OK to whatever the privacy policy might be. They'll share your data wherever they can monetize it. I mean, that's just the reality. And so you have to assume, you know, frankly, any app that you're using is selling your data. And depending on the type of app, I think there's, you know, potentially more risk to some. You know, I'm a big Strava, you know, sort of sports fitness app user. There's tons of information there that has relevance to insurance carriers regarding your healthiness, right? Whether you're exercising, whether you're not exercising, you have to assume a lot of these providers are selling your data, even if it's a paid subscription that you've got, right? You can guarantee it if they're free. If they're paid, though, they're still monetizing your data in other ways.
What are some ways that listeners can safely navigate social media, or is it a matter of not being on social media?
So if you had asked me this question a year ago, I would say, with social media, you really want to be mindful of what you share. And this still holds true. You want to be mindful about what you share, right? Because not everybody that you're sharing with you might not know everybody, right? So if you're on vacation, try to make sure that family photos and, you know, things about the fact that you're traveling are shared to a smaller audience that you actually know, rather than, you know, a giant public community, because there's risk there. You know, publicizing that you're away for an extended amount of time, you might not want everybody to know that. And those platforms succeed by the broader distribution of sort of information and data. So they're going to change their privacy settings and their sharing settings pretty regularly, probably a couple of times a year. So you really want to go in and make sure that the privacy settings are set the way you want them. Make adjustments periodically, because they're updating their app features all of the time. They're probably updating them to share information more broadly, right? They're not looking to keep your data private. It's incumbent on the user to make sure that you're validating that the settings are set the way that you want. Fast forward now to the day of AI. And I'm not a huge social media user, but I feel like I have a lot less interest now in wading through all the AI generated content, all of the sensationalized content, right? All the things that you see people pumping out, because it's really fast, really easy, and frankly, really high quality. So it's difficult sometimes to actually know, you know, am I looking at an avalanche that occurred on a highway in Denver, or is it fake? And you have to spend, you know, frankly, precious seconds of your time trying to figure that out. And I think it's just getting more and more cluttered with falsity. And I think it's a less compelling space.
We all have some kind of digital footprint, but sure, if there is information that is found out online that maybe someone doesn't want to be online, how can they go about deleting information about themselves online? What's the best way to approach that?
Yeah, it is difficult. You can certainly reach out to reputable providers. So you can reach out to a Google if there are, you know, if there's false information that maybe has been written about you, right? They might be able to do some takedowns. There's a legal process typically to follow something like that. So as long as you're talking about some of your more established, more reputable sources, they will often have a formal way to essentially file a complaint, ask for data to be taken down or expunged. Probably going to be a lengthy process. It probably won't be super easy to do, but there is a way to do that. If you're talking about some of the more, you know, maybe fringe social media sites, that probably gets a little bit more complicated. They aren't built necessarily with, you know, legal teams and processes that are as robust. But it's going to be different for each platform. It's never going to be incredibly straightforward. And the cynical part of me sort of says, once something is made available digitally, it's easy for people to copy it. It's easy for people to share it. And it's very difficult to sort of globally and permanently expunge data.
To hear the full interview, go to WSHU.org or download the WSHU app. Thanks for listening. I'm Janice Roman.
For the latest from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. And for instant access to your favorite programs and podcasts, download the free WSHU app today on the App Store or Google Play. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak tomorrow.